Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Tale of Two Game Devs, a podcast about two friends who aren't video game industry veterans.
But want to be.
Now, that voice you just heard was out of my friend Milo, the kitten keeper.
And that other lovely voice is a lover of all things adorable, my dear friend Michaela.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so what's the deal with... Milo told me he's got some kittens at his house right now who may or may not show up on the mic as special guests on the podcast at some point. what's the deal with the kittens?
Yeah, so we've for, oh, man, 5, 6, 7, 8 years now, I think, a very long time, we've been foster parents for kittens for our local humane shelter. What that means is that around springtime through the end of summer, we will start getting new batches of kittens for about 2 to 3 weeks, and then we take them back. And what's really great about that is that you get all the joy of kittens without having to be stuck with them as they grow older.
That's awesome. You get to keep them while they're young and cute and then give them away before they get old.
That's right. That's right. Old and haggard.
Like your cat that you have at home that has some interesting habits.
That's right. The nipple sucker from Mars. No.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so the kittens are over here next to me, and it's so funny. My mother and brother are off getting coffee, and right before that, the kittens had just pooped over everything, right? And so they were hurrying up because they knew I had a podcast to get to, and they're like, we're sorry. The kittens are just, there's poop everywhere.
Oh no.
Because kittens, what are you going to do?
I mean, I don't know. That definitely sounds like, I feel like there are pros and cons to your cat as it gets older, because like it learns where to poop, which is pretty nice, but I mean, it stops being cute,
but it's not
but
as
it
cute.
Also stops being a pooping machine. I mean, the poop is less cute, you know?
Yeah. You can get away with it when you're tiny. Just give you a free pass for everything.
The second you get a little bit older, people start looking at you funny if you just poop wherever.
Right. Such, but you get old enough and then suddenly you slide back into it and everyone's okay with it because you're old.
Yeah, it's fair.
So obviously we're both a little sniffy today, which is great.
I don't know why I'm feeling sniffy today. Like,
you.
I'm not feeling sniffly. That would be impressive, given the distance. But
yeah,
I don't know
it
what it is.
You digitally. I gave you a virus.
I feel like I've got like something stuck in my nose in like one of the nostrils, which I think is why I keep sniffing. But like, I don't feel like I'm sick at all. You sound, however, like you may be sick.
Yeah, I just stayed up until, I don't know, 2 a.m. My dad was rocking out last night, and so I watched him play music. And they were done at 11:30, but, you know, they've got to do loadouts, and they've got to talk to all the people in the crowd, and they've got to have their band meeting. So I don't think I got back to like 1, and then I stayed up a little bit later so my mother would do some massage work on my arms. I got a bit of golfer's elbow going on. Isn't it just? Got a bit of golfer's elbow going on. So my chiropractor was poking around in there, and he essentially did like a deep tissue massage on the area. And oh God, everything's like inflamed and stiff. And it's like, I don't want to move my arms. So I joke that my entire body at this point is an RSI, repetitive strain injury.
Yeah, geez. Wow. I mean, like, is it getting worse? Is it getting better? Or is this just like a bump on the road?
So I think this is just like, as my body starts to heal, more stuff can, like my whole body was messed up, right? And so it's like, mm-hmm. as I heal, there's this process of exercising, and that's going to bring up other stuff that might already have been weak. So I'm curious if this was caused by one of the exercises I'm doing. Oddly, I don't think it was caused by... I did a little bit of gaming somewhere over the past 2 weeks, but I don't think it was caused by that, because it's actually showing up in my left arm, which is not the arm that would have been doing repetitive motions. Mm. And so I'm curious if it's one of my exercises or if it was just always there. And
It really just stepped up when my chiropractor started pushing around in there, right? Because now it's like all that stuff that was just hanging out is now like, oh God, you found me, blarg. So, yummy.
It sounds very delicious. But...
yeah, but my thumbs are getting stronger. It actually feels like just yesterday my left thumb hit sort of a turning point where just in everyday life it feels normal. It doesn't have endurance yet, but it's like there's no pain. It just moves like a thumb should move. So that's really nice. My right thumb's worse though, so it's not like it got worse, but it's just in a worse state overall. So that one's still lagging a little bit behind. But that's to be expected. It takes about 6 weeks for tendons to get a little bit stronger. So we'll see in about 2 weeks from now how my right thumb's doing.
Yeah, I mean, fingers crossed, assuming your fingers can work. But
that's right. Yeah.
Do you think you could cross them?
Oh, I can cross. What is this? My, what is the longest finger on your hand called?
That's the middle finger, right?
Yes, that is the middle finger. You are correct. Well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can cross middle finger over pointer, but if I do pointer over middle finger, then I get pain.
I mean, pointer over middle finger. I'm trying it right now. It's a lot harder to do that. Like, I can easily cross middle finger over pointer. I think it might just be because you have more length to work with middle finger.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would make sense. Huh. Interesting. I've never really thought about this before.
Deep thoughts with Milo.
Yeah. Hopefully we've got like all of our listeners crossing their fingers and being like, huh, that's what it works like. Interesting.
Yeah. this band that my dad plays in, it's a R&B / funk cover band. So they're called Sarah B3 and the 45 RPM, and they cover a lot of funk and soul, and it's just an absolute blast. The crowd goes wild when they play their songs. The last song that they play is, I don't remember the name of it, but all the artists on stage are jumping with their arms in the air, and the entire crowd starts jumping with their arms in the air. Out of all the bands that I've seen live, I haven't seen more dancing than this band gets. It's really good.
It's so cool. Yeah, well, and like, I'm assuming they're more like, they're smaller, more intimate venues that they play. So there's probably like more of an ability to like build rapport with the crowd, you know?
Sure. I mean, they're not like gigantic rock star stages, but I mean, we were in an outside stage yesterday. They had pretty packed. It was fairly big. It wasn't super small, this venue, but I mean, it's not like concert, gigantic rock star concert style, right? It's like,
right, that's fair.
Third, maybe less of that, but those are huge. Those are huge,
right? Like stadiums,
venues.
Like stadium,
yeah, not
playing,
not like that.
Yeah, that's just on a whole nother level.
Yeah. Yep. Oh gosh, I got to sneeze. Cover for me. Talk about interesting things.
So you know what's really interesting is sickness, because sickness is what causes Milo to sneeze, and sneezes have kind of a funny noise. So like, I don't know, I just feel like they're kind of cool, because like, I mean, I wouldn't want somebody to sneeze on me. No, that would be gross. I wouldn't like that at all. But like, hearing people sneeze is always kind of interesting to me, like partly because people have like so many different kinds of sneezes, you know? Like there are some who are like incredibly quiet sneezers, like you barely know. There's some that like sound like a mouse squeaking when they sneeze, and there's some who like practically shake the heavens and the earth like incredibly loudly with like these massive earth-shaking sneezes. It's kind of how yeah. You're
yeah,
back.
They actually like split the earth open.
I was super improvising there. I'm glad you got back, because I was starting to get worried that I was gonna have to carry the sneeze thing for a while. Yeah.
I was gonna see how long you were gonna go for it, but then you said funny things and I couldn't help but laugh.
Good. Good.
Oh man, what else have I been up to this week? I think I talked a little bit about playing Overwatch. Did I do that last podcast?
Yeah, you talked about how like your hand strength, your muscles had atrophied a lot. And And you were trying to like limit your playtime, of course.
Yes. Yeah, okay. I haven't played since then, but I was curious if I'd chatted about that. Man, most of my days are just, I feel okay, so you know
when a movie star is in a movie, specifically like action movies or hero movies. And yeah, because that's what movie stars do, right? Right.
Okay. Right. I'm scooping.
But they're like all ridiculously well built, like super strong or super fit or super slim or whatever it is that, that their character demands. So to get ready for those kinds of roles, right, they do lots and lots and lots and lots of crazy exercise, multiple hours a day for many days. As they're getting ready for this role to look like a bad, like a really, really jacked up person. Because, I mean, superhero or action movie star, right?
Right.
I feel like that except for my wrists and fingers. So most of my days is just like, I do lots of stretching. I do lots of like stuff with a TheraBand, which is a stretchy resistance band. And I've got all sorts of isometric exercises and putty exercises. And just like incrementally throughout the day, I'm working out my fingers. I'm working out my arms. I'm working out my mid-body strength. I'm doing stretches. I'm doing icing. So I just feel like my recovery is a full-time job right now.
Like, jeez.
Yeah, which I appreciate.
Are you going to look like an action hero when you're done? Or
my thumbs will.
Action thumb.
Action thumb. Did you ever see the thumb parody movies?
No, but it sounds like something I think you've mentioned to me before, maybe on this podcast, but like way long ago on the podcast, like in the first 10 episodes, maybe.
Oh, man. Okay, so there's a set of six movies that they're parody movies of Batman, Titanic, Frankenstein, The Blair Witch, and two others that I can't remember off the top of my head. And what this person did is, oh, Star Wars is one of them. He went and remade all of these movies, but only using his thumbs and a little bit of weird animation stuff. And what he does is he'll literally just have thumbs dressed in miniature costumes wandering around on this movie set that he built. And then he'll like use special effects to put faces on the thumbs, and they'll have little puppet arms, and they'll go around and do the movie in 30 minutes. That's so funny. And it's utterly stupid.
I want to see this now.
You really should. You really should. I would suggest starting with Thumb Wars. Then there's Thumbtanic, The Blair Thumb. Frankenstein wasn't one of them. Wow, I made that up. Man, I don't remember what the other three were. I'm so curious now.
I think I just found it by searching it on YouTube. Thumb Wars by Thumbtackers. Yep. Oh my God, this looks like... This is actually like really high effort.
right. Yeah, it's not badly done. It's actually really well done.
But it's just the concept is so dumb.
Yeah.
From the creators of Jimmy Neutron? Hold on a sec.
This might be different than the ones I saw, unless there's just like background info I didn't know.
Well, hold on. You said it's by who? According to the second result, which looks like the same Thumb Wars to me, it says it's from the creators of Jimmy Neutron, the weird parody series from the creators of Jimmy Neutron. So it could just be that they went on to do these goofy YouTube videos after Jimmy Neutron. Who knows?
But okay, wait. You said it was by who?
The creators of Jimmy Neutron. Oh, Thumbtackers.
Thumbtackers is their name. Okay, I'm looking it up to see if it's the same one. Because that I would not have expected that. But
yeah,
it was so long
the video
ago.
That says it's from the creators of Jimmy Neutron, that's by somebody else named Billiam. It looks like it's just a video about Thumb Wars.
Uh-huh. Okay, yep. Thumbtackers, Thumb Wars. Steve Odekirk is the one.
That name sounds familiar. It might be because of Jimmy Neutron.
Now we have to look up Steve Odekirk.
Yeah, we're doing live fact checking.
Please stand by.
Or sit, you know, whatever you'd like to do.
What?
Steve Odekirk.
Okay, so this is his IMDb profile. It says, Steve Odekirk, the Academy Award-nominated multi-hyphenate, has built an extraordinary career, experiencing vast success in writing, directing, producing, acting, stand-up comedy, and computer-generated animation. Holy crap. Okay, what has
he
done?
Yeah, and it also credits him with Thumb Wars, the Phantom... Yes. The Phantom Cuticle.
Yeah, so he did all the thumb movies. I don't know that I've seen his other stuff though.
Oh, he was a writer for Planet Sheen, which looks like it was like a spinoff of Jimmy Neutron.
Yeah.
In like 2010, 2011.
And he also, it looks like he did the screenplay for one of the Jimmy Neutron movies. Oh, okay.
And he actually, according to IMDb here, he actually did Jimmy Neutron, the TV series.
Yeah. Yep. There it is. And he also wrote When Nature Calls, Ace Ventura.
Oh, perfect. That's how you know he's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's funny because he did the Thumb Wars before Jimmy Neutron. That's interesting.
Yeah, I remember watching it as a kid. Not Jimmy Neutron, but Thumb Wars.
Thumb Wars? Yeah, see, yep. I assumed Thumb Wars was just a goofy YouTube video. I didn't realize it was like a goofy pre-YouTube video.
Right.
He wrote The Nutty Professor, the screenplay. He's been all over like the goofy verse, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a goofy dude. he did do Frankenthumb. Frankenthumb is actually a thing. He also did the God Thumb, which is one of the ones I was forgetting. There was one more that I missed, but I don't remember.
Gotcha. Producer on Bruce Almighty, also a very goofy movie.
Wait, he was actually on the Goofy Movie, or?
Oh no, I was just calling Bruce Almighty a Goofy Movie.
It is a Goofy movie. Unfortunately, yeah. It doesn't actually have Goofy in it.
Unfortunately, yeah, it could have been so much more. Okay. Anyway,
I still have
enough
the box
of...
set sitting with all my DVDs somewhere.
You've got the collector's edition Thumb Wars.
That's right.
We've got to link it in the description now. I'm going to make sure I do that so that they can see it in all its thumb glory, I guess.
Please do. So tell me about your week.
Yeah. So earlier this week, I got back to Minneapolis, and I've been here for the last few days in Minneapolis. And I start work in my summer internship tomorrow, so I haven't had to work yet. I'm kind of, you know, in that nice limbo where you can do whatever you want for a while between the school semester and the beginning of my job. But fun story from earlier in the week, right? So I was going to be taking a bus from Madison, Wisconsin to Minneapolis, Minnesota to get back from my home in Rockford, from my mom's home in Rockford to like my home in Minneapolis. And so mom was driving me up to Madison, dropped me off like at the bus stop, and the bus was like right there. And so I went up, I showed the driver my ticket so that I could get on that bus. And she was like, oh, I don't think I have anything like with your ticket's number on it. And I was like, well, that's weird. I mean, here's the ticket. I bought it. And she took a closer look at it. And she was like, this says May 20th. And it was May 27th. So that means I had accidentally bought a ticket for the bus that was scheduled to leave a week before I actually was leaving.
No.
So yeah, I was like, oh God. Oh no. And so I like immediately like called my mom and I was like, yeah, bought the wrong ticket. I'm going to need to find some other way to get back to Minneapolis. And so this was like a Megabus ticket. I looked for like any more Megabus tickets. There weren't any until like the next day. And that was Memorial Day is the day it was on. So the next day was going to be a work day. And there weren't any times that like were outside my mom's working hours and weren't in the middle of the night. So she was like, I don't know how I'm going to be able to get you to one. Maybe you can talk to your grandparents and see if they'll be nice and drive you. And so like, I looked around some more. I decided, you know what? I'm going to go check out Greyhound's website for their tickets. Cause I know I've heard bad things about Greyhound buses, but might as well see. And lo and behold, they had one for that night at 8 PM. And at the time, like it was currently like 3 PM. And it's like, oh, well, we could make that. I would have to ride on a Greyhound, which isn't the best thing, but we could make it. So I told my mom, we ended up buying one of those tickets, and she had to like drive back to Illinois to get my brother and sister back to their dad's house. Cause like it had been, because my parents are divorced, and it had been like my mom's weekend for the kids, and then she had to drive them back to dad's. So she did that, and then she drove me all the way back up to Madison. And so we just had like a really whole lot of road tripping that day. And then I just got on this 8 p.m. bus, ended up back in Minneapolis at 1 a.m., which wasn't that bad because it was very quiet, so people weren't loud at all. They were sleeping instead. and I mean, honestly, like the seats were plenty comfortable. So as far as the buses I've rode before, that was actually a pretty good experience, despite the fact that it's being a Greyhound and that they're known for being bad. But yeah, so
you made it back.
I did. After a few misadventures, I made it back.
Yeah, so you traveled like a rock star, and I was at a rock concert.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I guess those two kind of connect. But yeah, since then, I've just honestly haven't done a whole lot. I've done some work on Hunted. I'll talk about that in Dev Thoughts. I've, you know, met a couple of friends. I'm going to go meet with another one tonight, you know, in my last sort of hurrah before I have to become a working woman in the morning. but yeah, also something kind of fun. I finally got around to watching the fifth season of BoJack Horseman.
Okay.
I know you and me both dearly love BoJack. Have you seen the fifth season yet?
That's the one that came out last year, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes? Okay.
Yeah.
okay, but
I don't remember it because I watched it last year, but I'm sure I loved it.
I mean, see, I just watched it, but it was pretty good. Yeah, I don't know, I felt like it didn't have a lot of the same impact that some of the earlier seasons had, like emotionally, but like it definitely still had its moments, and it was very funny as always. I feel like every season it gets funnier, but
yeah,
it's pretty good. So
yeah, from what I remember, I liked, like, season 4 was a masterpiece, and season 5 was also really good, but season 4 was a masterpiece, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I think that's the one where they played with time and memory a lot and did some really cool things to show that.
Yeah, I mean, they did in, like, just the second to last episode, though. Like, I don't think they did it as much beforehand or after, or in, like, the final episode, but that second to last episode on its own is like a masterpiece. So that's time zero. But
yeah, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd have to go back and watch the seasons again. I don't remember which one it was, but I think it was season 4 that blew me away. And then season 5, I didn't enjoy as much. Not to say I didn't enjoy it. I loved it. It's BoJack Horseman.
Yeah.
No, consistently great.
Yeah. That's about how I felt. Is that like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like 2, 3, and 4. I super loved. And then 5 probably wasn't as good as any of them, but better than season 1, I think. I don't know. I'm just trying to rank them in my brain. There's no particular reason to do that, but
hopefully we get season 6 at the end of summer here.
Oh, I know they've already like promised they'll get another season 6. I don't know when, but they'll get us one.
I didn't see any release date. Typically it was, I think, July or September, I think is what they've traditionally done.
I think it was September for both 4 and 5. So like 4 was like September 2017 and then 5 was 2015, I think.
Okay. Okay. Mm. I'm just slowly getting more and more congested over here.
Yeah, I can tell. You sound almost like you're like slowing down, tired too.
Help me.
Snot is slowly taking over your mortal coil.
Yeah. I'm amassing this small pile of tissues to my left right now.
Oh no. It is a testament to your own condition, I guess.
Yep. I'll build a monument.
a monu snot mint. Snot you mint.
Snot you mint. Yeah.
Monu snot. I don't know.
Gross.
Yeah, gross. But
you got any more for the week?
I'm thinking.
I'm snotting.
Oh, you poor baby. But not any more that's worth talking about other than the Dev Thoughts stuff. Speaking of,
Dev Thoughts.
There you go. Let's do it. All right. Have you got any dev thoughts, Milo?
Let's see. I built my portfolio and finished applying to Girls Make Games on Friday, which would be last Friday your guys' time.
So is the portfolio like officially done for now?
Done for now, yes. There's still more on there that needs to be added for it to actually be a good design portfolio. But yes, it's finished and it's a good enough state. I would give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay. Gotcha.
It is functional and good enough to apply for this job.
And I mean, I know you have incredibly high standards for yourself, so...
Yeah. Yeah, it just needs that polish that takes it from the 7 to a 10. Because the 7 is like really good games, right? For anyone who's not a developer, really, really good games. The ones that you play, you're like, holy crap, this is amazing. They all start and like finish production typically at about a 7. Like the core of it is there and it's good and it's got its own identity, but it's kind of rough around the edges. And it's amazing how much of a difference that rough around the edges can make. So once they finish like building all this stuff, then they actually go to making it really, really good, and that's post-production. So that's what this needs. This needs polish and post-production.
Gotcha. But it's cool. I don't know. Yeah. Any thoughts about it? Like the process of building it? Because I know it's taken you a bit.
Yeah. No, not really. I mean, I built it around... I'm sorry. I'm feeling really stuffy and my brain is feeling congested too. So I'm I'm feeling really slow at the moment.
The snot's all the way past the top.
Yep. I'm just going to go lie down. I modeled it a little bit after cinema. So it's got these black bars at the top and bottom of the screen and then sunflowers in the background because I was showing a prototype to my roommates and they're like, yeah, this is fine. It doesn't really capture you as a person. I'm like, huh, what would? It's like cinematic sunflowers. That should do it. So we've got the theming of cinematic sunflowers and showcase of all the games that I've built of recent.
So you're going to give me a link so I can check it out, though, right?
I will do my best to remember, yes.
All right.
How about you? Please talk dev thoughts so I can blow my nose for all eternity.
Okay. You go ahead and blow your nose for all it's worth. But
Sounds good.
Yeah, so I finally got back into like working on Hunted some in this last week. I hadn't worked on it, I don't think, since winter break. So it had been a while. I think I talked about this a bit on the podcast, like with my transition and like a busier than expected school semester and busier than expected TA work. I just ended up not really having any more like time and mental energy to put into something else. So, but now I do again. So this week I got a hold of the artist I'm partnered with for Hunted, Road, and I like, you know, sent her a message about setting up a time to design the tutorial for Hunted, because we had talked about basically going through the process of like sort of designing the tutorial together, like including like what sorts of art we're going to need for the tutorial, what the process of going through the tutorial is going to look like, maybe like write it out. And then we kind of thought of like storyboarding it out. And then once that was done, she could go and make some of the art that we would need. And then I could go and like implement it inside Unity. And then once both of those are done, we can wrap it all together and it'd be pretty and cool. But yeah, one of the reasons like the art for the tutorial was kind of a big deal is because if you'll remember back from like way long ago in this podcast, I think we had talked about this, but we were planning on having basically like a whole new character guide you through the tutorial in Hunted that we were calling
the Spirit of the Hunt.
Yes, the Spirit of the Hunt. The Spirit of the Hunt, who's basically like this kind of like evil mischievous ghost dude. And the idea behind him is that he runs the game of Hunted and he's the one who put like the survivor and the hunter on this map and is making them fight to the death. Well, he's making the hunter fight the survivor to the death and he's making the survivor try not to die. But And so that was the idea that, like, yeah, this solves like a lot of problems, right? This like gives us a nice, fun little framing device for our tutorial. It gives us the ability to essentially like have the game designer talk straight to the players, but like in a costume. And it also like gives us some like lore to flesh out the backstory of our world and just make it seem more full and interesting and fun. So, yeah. And so we basically designed the tutorial from the perspective of the spirit telling you how to play the game, and with the idea that we would like have it work kind of like an RPG with like these dialogue boxes from the spirit popping up while he's talking. And you can see like him just like standing there on the side, like with different emotions that reflect whatever he's currently saying. Kind of like that standard sort of like JRPG character portrait model is what we were thinking to do. And so then most of the art the road's going to have to do for this will be like, you know, the various like poses and positions for the spirit of the hunt. And so what we've been doing mostly is just been kind of like writing out the tutorial. Like it kind of looks like a play almost the way that we've written it, like where we've got like different dialogue boxes for the spirit. And then we've got like different things that are essentially stage directions that are like, okay, well now all of the screen is going to darken except for this one spot on the button. And so that the player like knows to press that button now, like stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know. And this has ended up being more work than I kind of guess we had originally thought, but like kind of like writing out the entire tutorial along with like all of like the instructions for what will happen step by step is proving to be like a decent amount of work, just because there's a decent amount of mechanics in the game the players need to learn. And also like we're taking the time to sort of, you know, have the spirit like crack jokes and flesh out their own character and stuff like that. And the hope is that once this is all done, this will be a pretty fun way for players to be introduced to the game. But yeah, you know, I suppose we won't super know that until like we've at least got some form of the tutorial running and we can get it in front of people, which we've both acknowledged. So looking forward to getting this written so that I can put it in the game and then bring it to people and see what adjustments we need to make from there.
Yeah. Playtesting.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm always amazed by how much work set pieces take, and I consider a tutorial a set piece, right? But these like specialized moments in the game, they take so much work.
Yeah, I didn't realize how much work it was going to take to just like write the script for it, you know?
Yeah.
But
how do you make it interesting and engaging and to the point where people don't quit while they're just learning the game?
Yeah. And I think a large part of the way we're making it interesting is like partly due to the virtue that like the game is entirely multiplayer and we're making the tutorial multiplayer as well. Like you have another person keeping you engaged because you're both there in person, and you have the spirit of the hunt as a character also like keeping you engaged by being interesting and spooky and menacing and all those fun things.
You're an entertainer.
yeah. And I feel like it might create like an interesting dynamic between the two players, because like the players are fighting against each other, but because the spirit has forced them to, so they're kind of like both antagonistic towards the spirit, but there's nothing they can do about it. So,
oh no.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good stuff.
But yeah, I don't know. It kind of like, it frames the story differently and I like it. But like we've got the spirit, of course, you know, like giving like menacing grins and doing like occasionally being sarcastic towards the player, and occasionally just like every time they run into like some treacherous thing that they haven't seen yet, the spirit's like super happy, like, oh, look at that, you just hit a trap, I'm so excited, you know, stuff like that.
Yay.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But yeah, I don't know. We're kind of like having a good time and laughing every now and then just while we're writing this. So
right,
I'm excited to see it in the game. Yeah, which hopefully means it's engaging. But
or that'll transfer to the player at the very least.
Yeah.
Very good. Shall we move to our next thing?
Well, yeah, let's move to it.
Okay. Banana now.
Gamer thoughts. Okay, well, what have you been playing?
Yeah, so I played a little bit of Overwatch. I mainly have been watching Overwatch, though, right? Like, I'll go and learn different things about Overwatch.
And just staring from afar.
Yes, yes, yes. Really, I'm essentially studying, right? This is this is my equivalent of studying. But I was watching a coach named Jane, and he's one of the coaches for the esports teams, and he's utterly brilliant, like his planning and stuff. I was just watching a game where he's shot calling, and that's essentially where he's telling his team what to do and of threats around them. And the way that he plays the game is so smart, where it takes into account, okay, here's the status of all of my enemy opponents, here's the status of my team, we're at a disadvantage. But then he's able, like in this particular video that I was super impressed with, he used the map to flip the tables on his opponent, even though his opponent had the upper hand. It was just brilliant. And also I was amazed that Blizzard's design could allow for something like that, where they've got there's this control point that the attacking team is trying to capture, and Jane was running defense and they're trying to hold the enemy team from getting that capture point. And to the left of the capture point is this building where there's this upper area and there's this lower area that's entirely enclosed. And so what happens is the attacking team comes in and uses this super ability that allows them to, gives them the potential to entirely destroy their team, or at least like small targets that don't have a lot of health. So what Jane does is he moves his whole, all the small people, all the tiny people on his team into that one room that's entirely enclosed, and then uses one of their own special abilities to essentially block off the doorway so that their attack can't come through the door without getting themselves killed. And so they essentially just waste their entire super ability. I'm like, this is so smart. And the fact that Blizzard had set up this sort of like bunker area just next to the point that allows for stuff like that. It's a really interesting design choice, because the bunker essentially acts to, it gives you the benefit of having more cover to use, like you can't take a lot of damage, but there's also really terrible sight lines to your team and the point, and only one or two locations to funnel out. So what I was realizing about Blizzard's map design in Overwatch is that there's all these options that they give you as the player, but each of them come with trade-offs, right? So you could, if you're on an attack route, you've got three different options. Typically, you can go straight down the main, and that's, you know, really easy to see everything and kind of hard to push up, because the enemy team usually has a good situation. But then there's flanks, like side flanks. But if you take the side flanks, there's trade-offs. So one, you don't have to go up main and take a bunch of spam damage from your opponent. But maybe one of the flanks has a gigantic cliff that you could fall off of. So if you take the flank, you can avoid all of the incoming damage on your approach to the control point to capture. But you're at much higher risk if the opponent tries to use any sort of area control stuff and use the cliff to push you off, right? Because you don't have that as much of a, you don't have like walls or anything to protect you. So it's really interesting, because it gives you choices in the map design and then makes them interesting with trade-offs. It's just, I'm completely amazed at the level of skill that went into building these maps.
That's really cool. And also, I'm reminded of like this kind of meme-y video that I saw, I think like a day or two ago, from Team Fortress 2, where there's like an engineer that like sets up what looks like some kind of dispenser for his teammates, like in like the doorway of basically the way to a capture point, so that like enemies can't get around it and they need to break the dispenser, but also he's standing behind it and constantly repairing it so that they can't break it fast enough to get through the doorway. And so like it was a really fun video, because he ended up basically like trolling everybody by just like staying behind it and like fixing it and keeping them from getting through, until eventually they did end up breaking the dispenser, finally, when they got like the entire team together to do it. And then the engineer killed all of them and then built another dispenser in the way. It was really funny.
That's awesome.
But that's what I was reminded of immediately when he talked about blocking people at the doorway of the bunker.
Yeah, yeah. How funny.
I'll probably link that video in here just so people can see it and laugh like I did.
I want to show it to my brother. He'll love it.
Is he a TF2 fan?
Yeah. He doesn't play it anymore because his friends don't play it. He plays Overwatch instead because I play it.
And his friends play it. That's fair. The TF2 is free. It's just free Overwatch.
Yeah, except it's not because Overwatch is better. What?
Oh, okay.
Shots fired. The gamer brain is coming out. Dev's put to the side. Fanboy here.
This is what happens when you get consumed by snot. Like, the rational dev disappears and, like, the primal gamer comes to the forefront. The primal gamer.
Oh gosh.
Just like you? make a couple grunts like some prehistoric like cave person like
I play with mouse and keyboard. I better. That's funny. What have you been playing?
I played a lot of a bit more like just Shapes and Beats recently. I don't think I have anything really more to say about that than what I said before. Just maybe the most interesting thing I guess to talk about is just yesterday I went to go hang out with a friend and play some Pokemon because I was going to let him borrow my copy of Pokemon Soul Silver on the DS, which is like an older Pokemon game at this point. And then he was going to let me borrow his copy of Pokemon Let's Go on the Switch, which just came out like last year, and I hadn't played it all yet. But and so basically we went over and we played Pokemon together while he was on the DS playing the game I gave him, and I was on the Switch playing the game that like he lent me. And so I'll talk about like Let's Go a bit, I think, because it's interesting. How familiar are you with Pokemon or in Pokemon Let's Go, Milo?
A little bit. Not a super lot, but enough to know how roughly it works.
Okay, cool. Well, you know, as most people know, Pokemon is all about taking this big adventure to like capture like all like the different cute creatures called Pokemon and then like build up like a perfect team of fighting Pokemon to like battle your way to the top of like the competitive scene in the world. All that fun stuff. But yeah, and so like normally like Pokemon games are like on handheld devices, like up until now, like they've been on like the Game Boy, Game Boy Advance, DS, 3DS. And so like at least like the core games, like there are sometimes spinoffs on console, but the core games have always been on like handhelds. And so now that we've got the Switch, which is both like a handheld and a console, there's kind of the opportunity to finally bring Pokemon to console, so to speak, even though it'll still be also on a handheld. And so kind of last year they did that for the first time with Pokemon Let's Go. And with Let's Go, they were doing some different things. Like it isn't technically like the next sort of like generation of Pokemon in that right. It's like the new region, new Pokemon, new everything. It was actually like kind of like they were calling it like a reimagining of like the first generation of Pokemon games. So like the way old ones on the Game Boy with like Pikachu, Bulbasaur, and Charmander and all those cute ones that like people probably think of most often when they think of Pokemon. But yeah, so they were kind of like reimagining it by like making it like this vibrant 3D world where you can like walk your Pokemon around like in real time. And also like they were bringing over some mechanics from Pokemon Go on mobile with this. They were kind of like going at this with the idea that this would be a more casual and accessible Pokemon game for people who haven't like been playing like all the Pokemon games on like handheld devices up until now and who are like hardcore battlers and stuff, you know?
Right.
But yeah, and so like they kind of like strip back some of the Pokemon catching mechanics so that like whenever you encounter a Pokemon, you just toss a Pokeball at them with motion controls, kind of similar to how you do it in Pokemon Go on mobile. And like the battles in the game are honestly pretty easy. I don't know. Like every time you fight like any Pokemon or catch any Pokemon, every single Pokemon in your party gains experience when like normally in most of the mainline games, only the Pokemon that like fought gained experience. But, you know, I think they're trying to like make it easier and make it so that you don't have to like grind and stuff. But yeah, like in my experience playing through like the first like segment of the game while I was there at his house, it definitely was easier, I would say. And I felt like it made for a way more relaxing game experience. But also it was just, I feel like the coolest part of the game was just sort of like seeing the Pokemon like in like a beautiful 3D world, like at like real life scale, so to speak, in that like you've got like the characters who aren't like squashed little sprites, but you've got like full 3D models for characters walking around. And then you've got Pokemon that are like to scale, like, you know, so if you see something massive like an Onix, which is a huge rock snake Pokemon, it like towers over everybody, or if you have something like tiny and cute like an Eevee, like it just looks like a really small like fox slash dog, and like it's just, it's really cute, and it can like ride around on your shoulder because it's so small. Yeah, and so like it was really fun to sort of get that sense of scale that you don't usually get in Pokemon games, because the Pokemon usually only like come out during battle, and like in the older games they would all be sprites that were the same size, so whether your Pokemon is like tiny or massive, the sprite would be roughly the same size, so you wouldn't get that sense of scale. And even in like the recent 3D games, which I haven't played, but in the recent Pokemon games on the 3DS, from what I know, they mostly only came out in battles, and in battle they all had to be like kept within like a certain size limit so that it wouldn't look too crazy. But and so yeah, I don't know, just seeing everything at scale in like this beautifully rendered like 3D cartoon world is just really satisfying, I feel like, in and of itself. So I've had a good time with it so far, and I'm looking forward to playing more and, you know, kind of having my entire Pokemon adventure.
Have they announced the next actual Pokemon game?
They did earlier this year, I think in February.
Okay.
It's coming out this year, is what they've said.
Okay.
They have like a teaser out for it. They're called Pokemon Sword and Shield.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be that cool. Jogs your memory a bit.
Yeah, I thought I heard something about that, but I couldn't remember. But yes, I want to play it. I haven't traditionally played a lot of Pokemon games, but that other gamer podcast that I listen to, or developer podcast that I listen to, they played Pokemon. Oh God, I don't remember, but it was really good. Just the design of that game is really smart.
Yeah, no, Pokemon games in general are just really fun and engaging, in my opinion. And I haven't played much of them since I was like 12 years old. So I'm totally ready to get back into it with Sword and Shield.
Right, that's about to change.
Exactly.
Very good. But okay, shall we wrap it up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up with the community segment, which is, once again, empty, because we don't get emails from people, but, you know, that's fine. If you do want to send us an email to break up this dry spell that's been going on for a long time, many months, then you can email us at atalesoftwogamedevs@gmail.com. No spaces, special characters, or capital letters, all lowercase, one word, atalesoftwogamedevs@gmail.com. Call toll free to get your free consultation. We don't have a number for you to call us, and we wouldn't give you a consultation anyway. We would just, you know, have a nice conversation with you. But yeah. Anyways, feel free to send any feedback about the podcast, any suggestions for games you'd like to see us play or talk about, any topics you'd like us to tackle. And if you want us to eventually stream, make sure to poke us about it, because we are planning on doing a Fallout stream at some point. But, you know, if people like it or people want us to do more, we could do more. It might be fun. But
I just need to unbreak and then we can stream.
Exactly. We got to wait for Milo to heal. He's training. He'll be there soon.
That's right. One day. We just need to do a Rocky montage.
We sound so tone deaf. But
yep.
You can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @2GameDevs. I will post a link to that in the description. Occasionally, I will actually post updates when new episodes are released. I need to start doing that again. I've been very lazy, but I'm supposed to do that. And when we do eventually stream, the Twitter will be announcing when and giving you the link. So feel free to follow that if you're interested in seeing us streaming eventually. But yeah, is that about everything?
One last thing. And that would be this next week / this week for you guys is going to be E3. And so our next episode is going to have to touch in on that, because how can we not?
That's true. That's true. Yeah, we'll probably just slate that into the regularly scheduled dev thoughts.
But there you go.
E3 is fun. I like talking about things at E3. I feel like except every year... what was that?
Except for the lack of PlayStation this year. We'll all cry about it.
Well, they're still giving like some kind of like talk that's like going to be live streamed, I'm guessing, right?
Not that I'm aware of. I think they pulled out due to the way the media works differently with online media. They felt that E3 has sort of become... I'm going to mess up the words here. But they felt that they would do better with their own like set game day where they show off all their own stuff and their own controlled presentation, because they feel that the internet just gets... One, that the internet gets information out so much quicker that E3 is sort of like you don't need this big gigantic press thing anymore. But two, also right. Because they're focusing on fewer bigger games, I don't think they actually have anything to show this E3 that they haven't already shown.
I mean, there's Stranding, which is apparently coming out this year.
I'm so excited to play it.
I would say I am interested. I am not convinced it's going to be good, but I think it's going to be very interesting, no matter what.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. Yeah. I don't think it'll be bad. I mean, at least from a review score standpoint, all of the Kojima games have gotten very high scores.
Well, and I think to a certain extent, it's almost like a Kool-Aid thing. Like, there's like people are drinking the Kojima Kool-Aid, and that like, well, Kojima is like this auteur and he makes really good games. Therefore, this game is a Kojima game, so it has to be good unless it's a train wreck. So I feel like, you know, like the game could be meh, but it's going to get high scores anyway because it has Kojima on it.
Possibly. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'm a little cynical, but...
Could be. I don't know. I've always enjoyed the games. I thought they're rather brilliant. Even if they're silly, they're still brilliant.
Mm. Well, that's a valid opinion.
This is from my opinion, and I'm too stuffier to have to bring any sort of argument to back that up. I will just state my opinion and then sit here and snot.
Just stewing in your own brew. But I felt like there was something I wanted to say. Oh, about the PlayStation presentation. Oh, I guess it still strikes me as weird that they aren't going to have any kind of like press presence at all. Like, I mean, I get that maybe they don't want to have a conference. Like, Nintendo stopped doing that a while ago. But like, they still have like a Nintendo Direct every year during E3. So I don't know. It strikes me as weird to not have anything happening during that time period, even if it's like entirely off site, you know?
Yeah. As far as I'm aware, they're not doing anything. And I think they do it for like, I forgot what their event's called. Destination PlayStation, maybe? I don't remember.
Like Days of Play is something? I don't know how that works.
I can't remember. I can't remember the event.
Who knows? Who knows? But anyway, all right, is that everything then?
Yeah.
For real this time?
I think so.
Okay. Well, I suppose we can wrap it up. So this has been A Tale of Two Game Devs, a podcast about two friends who aren't video game industry veterans.
But want to be.
We'll catch you next time.